We have to head to the link and check in with our insider, of course, at the link from ESPN.com and 97.5. The Fanatic joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline like he does before every Birds game. That would be Tim McManus here from ESPN and 97.5. The Fanatic. What's up, T-Mac?
What's going on, boys? An electric atmosphere here at Lincoln Financial.
I can hear it. I can hear it.
Hey, Tim, where's your cardboard cutout, man? Which are you in the end zone, 50-yard line, or what?
I'm up in the nosebleed, Gunner, where I belong. Yeah.
Well, T-Mac, man, as we get ready for this game, again, a spot that not many expected, 0-2, and pretty much in a must-win situation against the Cincinnati Bengals team. What was the focus? What was the message as best as you were able to get this week from Doug Peterson and the team?
Obviously, they got to lock in and get better on offense. That's where the focus has been for Doug Peterson, certainly for Carson Wentz and that crew. Just getting back to what they do well. I mean, something that really jumped out at me is that the Bengals are allowing 185 rush yards per game over the first 2 weeks of the season. So what does that tell you? Get the ball in Miles Sanders' hands and make it easy on Carson Wentz. I think that, you know, the defense has been uncharacteristic in their red zone giving. So they know that they need to clamp it down on their end and really get after a rookie quarterback in Joe Burrow. But for the offense, simplify it, get back to the ground game. Make it easy on Wentz. Let him get some layups. Not a term that Doug Peterson apparently likes. Let him get some layups, man. Let him get some layups and get him going from there.
You know, Tim, you kind of diagram exactly what I thought. I thought you have to take Carson Wentz out of the game, turn him into a game manager in this case, just because of his struggles the first 2 weeks and making sure that Miles Sanders gets involved. But my question now is, let's say that over the last 10 days, the Bengals have figured a way to solve their riddles, their mysteries on that defensive line, to solve a way to try to stop the run. If Carson Wentz has to throw the ball, has anything over the last week given you any faith, any confidence that Carson, the communication between Carson and Doug has improved, and Carson's decision-making, more importantly, is going to be different in this week opposed to what he's done the last couple weeks?
I mean, he's obviously gotten hit from all sides by it. You know, the coach wasn't exactly protecting him this week. And obviously, you know, the fans and media have been in a full throat talking about the things that he needs to do better. And he knows it. I mean, I think the good news for him is that a lot of the things that he has been showing us is correctable. I mean, all four of the interceptions were him forcing the football. And a lot of the things that are going on with him with the misses are mechanical. If he just... And this is Dan Orlovsky kind of broke it down this week that basically the way his mechanics are with his footwork is that he's in an upside down V is the way that his legs are looking. He doesn't have any bend to his front leg, and that's forcing his passes to throw high. So these are things that he can settle in and fix. And I think that the undercurrent to all of this is the fact that you have a quarterback who is pressing that doesn't feel all that comfortable. And he used this term this week: I need to trust what I see, which tells you what? He's not always trusting what he sees. He's a cerebral quarterback who faced two new defensive coordinators who isn't obviously very comfortable in everything that he's doing right now and the new pieces that he has around him. So I do expect him to start showing some uptick here. I mean, the first 2 weeks were unacceptable, but I do believe that he's better than what he has shown. Clearly, all of his career statistics suggest that. So I think that he is going to start getting into a rhythm. I think this is a perfect team to do it again.
Tim, let's stay with the quarterback theme for just a moment here. And I look at, for the second week in a row, they now activate Jalen Hurts. I mean, We all know that based on Carson's history, Jalen Hurts is one play away from quarterbacking his team. And when you consider the lack of reps he's had due to COVID, we're talking about a guy who's going to have to basically look at a scaled-down type offense if he gets in the game. I just don't understand. Maybe you can clarify why he doesn't stick with Sudfeld. I mean, you paid Sudfeld all that money to come back for 1 year. Why are you putting him on the active list instead of a rookie quarterback who would maybe have to run a wishbone if he ever gets in there and has to run his offense?
Well, I think a part of it is they're intrigued, Gunner, by the idea of him kind of coming in those specific packages to confuse defenses. And there was some effect to that. The plays that he got in, the three plays last week, averaged 6 yards per play, and that was the highest average out of all the package looks. Now, granted, it was just three plays. But the bottom line is that, you know, they did have some success with that, and I think they want to add on top of that. I wouldn't be surprised if they get the ball in his hands at some point instead of using him as a decoy. And I also believe they feel like they can kind of simplify the game plan down. A lot of what we saw during training camp was him using those zone reads. It wasn't quite wishbone, but it was close. I mean, you know, using a lot of the zone read action to get him out in space and get the opposing defense moving and confused as to where the ball is going. So it offers that misdirection element to the game. So I think they like what they see in him, and I think just the idea of using him in a package kind of overrides the security that they would have if Sudfeld was the number two instead.
Tim McManus joining us from Lincoln's Financial Field with that raucous crowd behind him right here on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast with the pregame show, Brian Westbrook, Derek Gunn, and Devon Givens.
You know, Tim, one of the things that we haven't seen, and we talked about how bad the offense has been as far as turning the ball over, but defensively, I know we had the one turnover on the special team side of the ball, but defensively, we haven't got the type of pressure we need on the quarterback. We haven't got the turnovers we need from the secondary and other parts of the defense. It's been my belief that our defense has played really good at home, and I think the crowd certainly has played a part in it. Has there been any talk about, because the lack of the crowd, the lack of the motion right there in the link, the way the defense played last week, and maybe not being able to produce that type of energy? Or is it just straight based upon the players and their ability to go out there and make plays in which they haven't done on the defensive side of the ball?
Every player to a man has mentioned the fact that it's just different and weird, and obviously not as big of a home field advantage. Not having fans here at the link, they have to create their own energy. There is a certain kind of tidal wave of energy that this fan base in particular can create for defense. And that's just, you know, that symmetry just hasn't been there for them. So they have to do it on their own. And when we're going back to the X's and O's, I mean, I think it all starts for this team along the defensive front. And probably the second biggest story, but one that hasn't been talked about nearly enough or as much as the first story, which is the struggles of Carson Wentz, the struggles of Fletcher Cox. I mean, this is a guy on the defensive end who is the engine for what they do defensively, and he has been not a ghost, but he has not generated nearly the amount of havoc that he normally does. And as we saw last week, he got injured. They're calling it first an oblique, then an abdomen. He was pointing to his back after the initial injury, whatever you want to call it. He had a wrap around his lower section in between series all last week, and was did not participate or was limited participate for this week in practice. Now, he is active. He is going to play. But can he be effective? Can he be the Fletcher Cox that they need him to be? And if not, can Javon Hargrave, the guy that they spent $13 million per on, can he step up? He had a really bad opening game last week coming back from a pec injury. And so I think that they need to generate it up front to allow the playmakers on the back area to play at all. Allow them to do their thing.
All right, Tim, give me one defensive lineman other than Fletcher Cox who's battling that oblique injury, and he played through a lot of pain last week, and it was 50-50 up until about 11:15 this morning as to whether or not he was going to play today. Give me one defensive lineman who it's imperative that he steps up and is not just a sporadic presence but a consistent presence, whether it's in the run defense or a rush and a passer today.
I think their best bet, Gunner, is Malik Jackson. I mean, he showed it in his past. You know, he was kind of a forgotten guy because of the season-ending injury last year. And then training camp, he was the standout on defense. And then he splashed, over the first couple of weeks as well. So I think he is the guy. I mean, because Hargrave's coming off the hamstring in the pack, he just doesn't seem like he's ready to take that big leap. Yeah, you know, I'm over waiting for Derek Barnett to be a consistent force. I mean, when he shows it, great, but I'm not banking on that. And Brandon Graham, has had a couple of nice plays, but not that consistency. But I think Malik Jackson can be the guy that generates the pressure up the middle. And, you know, you got an experienced defensive coordinator in Jim Schwartz. You got some experienced men up along that front. You got a rookie quarterback. I know he's high pedigree, but it's a rookie quarterback back there. And it's on guys like Schwartz to use that wealth of knowledge that he has over his decades in the league, and guys like Malik Jackson that know how to get after a quarterback, put that together and make it hell for Joe Burrow.
You know, Tim, you brought me right to my last question here. Joe Burrow, we know what Joe Mixon is normally, and he hasn't kind of got off this season under 4 yards of carry so far in the first couple games. But what type of threat is Joe Burrow to this defense? What has he done the first couple weeks of the season as a rookie quarterback that allows him to put up 30 points last week, that allows him to go out there in that first week of action and look pretty good towards the end of the game? What are the things that we've seen from him that are a threat for our defense as we go into this game this afternoon?
I mean, yeah, he's got a tremendous skill set. I mean, we all saw what he could do at LSU. He's got the moxie, he's got the accuracy. He can use his legs. I mean, even last week, the Bengals rushed 24 times. 7 of those were from Joe Burrow. And not to mention, he passed 61 times last week against Cleveland. I mean, so this is somebody that's going to have the ball in his hands a lot and has the kind of mindset, as we've seen, where he's not accepting what's been happening in Cincinnati for the last, what, like 50 years. I mean, he wants to change this thing around, and you don't want to give him confidence, because he's got plenty already, and if he gets rolling, all of a sudden he's thinking, I can make this team 0-3 right here. And so I think that the Eagles need to put him on his back, and I think they want him thrown 50 times. 60 times. I mean, if that's the situation where the defensive line gets to just pin their ears back and you have the Eagles using the ground game on the other end, then you're getting time of possession. Then you're getting Carson Wentz to the sweet spot. Then you're getting the defensive line exactly where they want to be. And that's just going A to B after the QB. So I think that's exactly the game plan that Doug Peterson and Jim Schwartz need to deploy here at 1:00.
Great insight, as always, from Tim McManus, live from Lincoln Financial Field, joining us on the pregame show. Tim, as always, thanks so much. We'll be reading you on ESPN.com and catching you during the week on the Fanatic as well, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, boys. Always my pleasure. Thank you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.